This is Sports Sunday.
I wonder if we could, like, set up an elaborate role-play scenario where we would just call in and give your best post-game question, and then I would be Ned Yost and try to answer them as well as I could.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Talk about Thoria's performance there in the third.
Talk about! Don't ask me a talk about question! I'm bleeping Ned Yost!
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Listen, I thought Jack really had a good outing. Welcome back to Sports Sunday. My name is Joshua Briscoe, as you probably just heard. And after hearing that liner back from break about the Royals and Ned Yost and Jack, I think it's time to talk about the Chiefs. Because we just did a good tight 25 on the Royals. That's all I got, man. I am doing training camp heroin at this point. The tweets just keep come barreling in. Patrick Mahomes is taking the third team on beautiful 2-minute drills. Matt Nagy, the offensive coordinator, is lauding him. We'll hear about that in a little bit from Matt Nagy a little later on. Today's the first day. Today, Sunday, is the first day that the Chiefs in training camp are in pads. So all the stories about how good, like, everyone has been will now no longer have the qualifier of, and also they are in t-shirts and shorts. But it's also, they're not, like, no one's getting cracked over the head today, I don't think. But, and I mentioned Pat Mahomes has been really good. He's gotten praise from all around. Alex Smith also has been apparently tremendous in his t-shirt and shorts section of basically the NFL Combine. But apparently during some of the 7-on-7 drills and everything, Alex Smith had like 2 days where he had like 2 passes hit the ground, something incredible. And this makes me think about a conversation we had about Alex Smith, I think before the draft. Maybe we talked about it after. We definitely talked about it before the draft. The idea that if the Chiefs were to take a rookie quarterback, that would be sort of looming over Alex Smith all year long, that we might get a more reckless Alex Smith. Now, for some guys, a more reckless version of that player would be disastrous. You don't want a more reckless Matt Stafford. But a more reckless Alex Smith just sort of becomes a guy who's not afraid of tighter windows and riskier shots. So if I've got a Chiefs quarterback menu, and I'm nervous about giving the reins to Patrick Mahomes, I think the first thing I'd want to order off that menu would be risk-taking Alex Smith. I don't know if I explained the logic behind that very well. What I'm saying is, Alex Smith knows. He knows. Herm Edwards doesn't know this. Several people have denied this. But Alex Smith knows that every inch of the Chiefs' plan for next season, for 2018, involves Alex Smith not being on it. The 2018 blueprint, every feasible iteration of it so far in the Chiefs' front office has Patrick Mahomes as the starting quarterback and Alex Smith playing for the Jags or something. I say this definitively because they traded big to go get Patrick Mahomes. They did not trade up to have him sit for 2 seasons as you lose the youth of Justin Houston and as Eric Berry gets older and as you maybe lose the entire player of a guy like Dee Ford. Those guys are not brought here to rot away as Alex Smith holds back Pat Mahomes. And also, Alex Smith next year has a huge cap hit that the Chiefs can dump a huge portion of by releasing him. There's more conversations about maybe this being Ben Roethlisberger's last year. If you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, in 2018 and you're trying to make a run and you've got incredible offensive weapons, maybe they'd be interested in giving up a mid-round draft pick for Alex Smith next season. I could absolutely see that happening. Genuinely, I could genuinely see that happening. You probably have to agree to a contract restructuring. But you ship over a fifth-round pick if no one else is interested, a third if someone is interested, to try to keep your team together, because Alex Smith can use weapons. Not like Roethlisberger can by any means, but I digress. The plan for 2018 is to be built around Patrick Mahomes and not Alex Smith. It saves you huge amounts of cap space. It gives you the more, dare I say, talented quarterback. It at least gives you the quarterback with a higher ceiling and with more unknowns. Why does that matter for this year's Alex Smith? Because he knows that. And he knows that if he wants to have a chance to stay the Chiefs quarterback in 2018, or even to show himself off to the rest of the NFL, he can't just be Alex Smith as we know him. Everyone's seen that already. The 49ers moved on from that for Colin Kaepernick. The Chiefs are going to move on from that for Patrick Mahomes. If Alex Smith wants to hold on to this job, or if he wants to get a starting job next year, then I think this is the season that he would want to uncork a little bit. Because he's not getting a starting job elsewhere by throwing 16 touchdowns this year. Colin Kaepernick threw more than that last year. You're not going to get a starting job in the NFL by being Alex Smith and throwing 16 touchdowns. It's not gonna happen. Is Alex Smith a top 20 quarterback in the league? Probably. The top 32 quarterback? Sure. Yeah. But if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2018, I would rather get the first quarterback on the board brought into that situation than to bother with Alex Smith. So I don't think that Alex Smith is openly auditioning for the rest of the league right now. I don't think that's in the front of his mind. But I think that's part of it. I think he knows what his fate in Kansas City is now. And I hope that leads him to having a little less conservative mindset. Where he is more willing to take risks, because what's going to happen? He's going to get fired next year? If he is bad this season, he's gone. If he's last year's Alex Smith this season, he's gone. If he throws a few more picks and a lot more touchdowns, if he works with a Pro Bowl tight end and makes Tyreek Hill a Pro Bowl wide receiver, but on a strong offensive line, and this team gets the AFC Championship game, maybe not. Maybe Alex Smith sticks around for one more season. But I think the Chiefs know this, I believe this, and I think Alex Smith knows this. If he is simply Alex Smith, the guy we all know and tolerate as a quarterback, he's going to have to find a new job next year. So, time to push it a little farther. Time to take more risks in a way that he hasn't. Now listen, the counterargument to this is that Alex Smith is simply incapable of doing that. If not by talent, by instincts. I don't know if you get a guy in his 12th season or what, I think it's 12, something like that. I don't know if you get a guy in his 12th season suddenly becoming a gambling quarterback. Maybe that doesn't happen. Maybe Alex Smith is never going to be that guy. But if he can be, if it is in him as a quarterback in any way, this is the season that that would have to happen. And also, I would love for that to happen. Now, I've been over here the last several weeks talking about the reasons that I think Patrick Mahomes could literally start day one and be a success. I'm not trying to convince you that Alex Smith is a trash heap. I have no interest in trashing Alex Smith. I have no interest in trying to convince you that Alex Smith is incompetent. Not interested in any of that. That's not where I am. But my fear is that we have just seen the entirety of Alex Smith. Which makes me more interested in the quarterback that has traits that Alex Smith simply doesn't have. That has a ceiling that Alex Smith simply doesn't have. That can take the Chiefs to a level that Alex Smith simply hasn't gotten the Chiefs to. That's why I'm so enamored by Patrick Mahomes. Because the more that I have watched him and heard other people who are better at watching tape than I am talk about him, the more convinced I become that Patrick Mahomes has a real chance to be something special. And at the very least, something valuable. By salary, by talent, the whole package. But if Alex Smith comes out this year and he starts performing to the height of his potential, I will not be over here telling you that it's Patrick Mahomes time. I just laid out the reasons why Alex Smith could surprise all of us. That's the biggest reason to me, is that he sees the writing on the wall. So maybe he decides this is whenever he has to play more recklessly. But I would be surprised to see Alex Smith do that. But I think it can happen. That's how it can happen. Will it? I don't really think so. If I have to make a guess right now, do I think Alex Smith is going to be playing quarterback in 2017 with a mindset and a philosophy that he hasn't been playing in his entire NFL career? No. Old dog, new tricks. I doubt it. But I also want to make sure that you understand where I'm at with Alex Smith and why I am there with Alex Smith. I'm at a point not of loathing, not at a point of hatred. I just think we've seen Alex Smith. But hey, he's been throwing the ball very well in shorts and a t-shirt. Apparently there's some chemistry with Tyreek Hill. And man, listen, I hope there is. I'm just concerned that that chemistry with Tyreek Hill will never travel more than 20 yards in the air. That's where my doubt creeps back in and squishes out the optimism that I've worked so hard to build. It's really it's gonna be a really fun season unless it's not. It's gonna be a really fun season unless it all goes straight to hell. But we're Chiefs fans, right? We can deal with that.
This is Sports Sunday.
People are about to destroy you on Twitter.
I know, I'm ready for it. Oh, but if you want to destroy me on Twitter, it's at JB Briscoe.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Follow me, then destroy me.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Charlie, thank you for reminding me. I haven't plugged my Twitter account once yet in this show. 45 minutes in. That's a new record, right? At JB Briscoe. It's a good call. It's been far too long. Nate Bucati of this very station is out at training camp live tweeting. Now, sounds like Alex Smith is having a good day again so far. He missed Spencer Ware on the wrong shoulder, but he threw a nice skinny post touchdown to Travis Kelce. That's exciting. Also, Kareem Hunt is running with the twos, Nate says, and that's something that I think I expected to take about this long. I expected to see Kareem Hunt start running with the twos about on the first day in pads. I know there's a little bit of wiggle room there in the expectations because he wasn't like a first round draft pick. But that's what he's here for. And as I've said over and over again, the Chiefs are willing, Andy Reid is willing perhaps, to put young guys in with the ones and the twos if that's where they're supposed to end up. Like how Mitch Morse was running with the ones very early on in training camp, his rookie season. So I think Kareem Hunt is going to keep getting a lot of action high up on the depth chart. Last thing from Nays, Tyreek Hill had a circus catch on a pass from Tyler Bray. He was covered, out-muscled, and the defender... God, reading is hard. Hill was covered and out-muscled his defender for the ball, juggled it, and caught it. Crowd clapping emojis. Nate just really like, Mahomes is back in. He's a madman right now. He's at Nate_Bucati if you want to have that supplement your radio show today. A few things have happened so far in camp that are interesting. There's a lot of speculation that we can do. A couple of interesting topics we'll probably have to wait until next hour to get to is people are talking on Twitter about booing Jamaal Charles whenever he comes to Arrowhead. I want to talk about that because I don't totally understand that. We'll break it down, though. I also wrote a little bit for Arrowhead Addict about a surprise cut that I think is coming. It's a guy that I genuinely think would be a surprise, but I also think it can make a really good case for. There are a couple of names, though, that I think could be surprise options on their way out. And also, a few people for Arrowhead Addict wrote about surprise cuts that I just don't see happening. Someone said Ron Parker. That guy's going to be wrong. He's just going to be wrong. But that's okay. Also, Clark Hunt talked about Colin Kaepernick, and we'll just spend like a little bit of time on that. Not a ton, but like a little bit. Just a little bit of time. Because I think it's interesting. Also, Bill Barnwell for ESPN ranked teams' offensive weapons. We might have time to get to that this segment. We'll see. You're going to be pissed, though, I promise. But yesterday, Patrick Mahomes was running a two-minute drill in T-shirts and shorts. I will say that for every quarterback, not just for Alex Smith. He was running in workout gear. But he did ran a two-minute drill. And Matt Nagy, the Chiefs offensive coordinator, was asked about it afterwards. And Nagy sort of praised Mahomes in a way that I actually think has some meaning. Because, first of all, the questions in this are good. There are good questions. And Nagy answers them really well. And he gives Mahomes some compliments that I don't think you can give to every single quarterback.
Hey, the rookie's two-minute drill out there. I know those are just four plays in a big camp. In fact, he was able to do it in that situation, a two-minute drill. That significant at all?
Yeah, I think so. You want to get off to the right foot, you know, and I'll tell you one thing that happens in these two-minute drills when you have to go 75 yards and you need a touchdown to do it. That first play is nice when you get a nice big chunk, you know, because when you only have a minute 58 on the clock, one timeout, situationally it helps you out.
Did you like how he was able to work the safety off on that one and then come back to Travis immediately and hit him through the game?
He's doing great. And I tell everybody, you know, from his very first practice that he had when he came in and was screaming in the huddle what the play was and didn't realize he was talking to the defense too, to where he is right now, looking off safeties, it's a huge leap.
Are we crazy? What did you think of that throw, the first one with Travis?
Yeah, it was phenomenal. I mean, it was a great throw. You know, he's used to that two-minute stuff. It helps him out, and he's throwing with confidence.
The knack and comfort he shows in that, is it easier to teach that, or is it easier to teach a quarterback to be comfortable in that, or is it easier to teach the other stuff?
Easier to teach the other stuff. I think some of that's DNA, you know? So if you have it, you feel comfortable in it. Not to mention some of these guys in college, when they do that, they're much more experienced. You know, when we're in our two-minute situation and the clock's rolling, there's less time to think, you know, and you're going faster, so you just kind of play ball.
I know you guys never stop coaching, so there had to be some criticism after the drive. That you share, or maybe not tell us, but did you still have coaching points after that drive? Did you share them?
Yeah, we told them don't get too big of a head, and it's okay to run the ball and just protect it with two hands and not one hand in the end zone.
Did he do the right thing on while scoring? I know it was a
yeah.
Record, but like,
yeah.
Did he miss something?
No, he was good. He did well. You know, it's that's tough to go 75 yards in that scenario, down four, when you need a touchdown. But again, I'm telling you, when you have that first chunk play, that helps you out immensely.
I really think that's a super interesting 2 minutes there from Matt Nagy, because the Chiefs have a real tendency to kind of overpraise and overestablish their veterans, and you underpraise the young guys, especially in this instance. How many times have you heard Andy Reid talk about how Alex Smith is the quarterback and how Alex is a good leader and Alex is doing things really well and Alex this and Alex that, all of these things that lift him up more and establish him more? Listening to Matt Nagy there sounded like a guy praising his established quarterback. He talked about, he used the word phenomenal, talked about him being great, how he talked about his DNA as a quarterback. He was referencing his instincts. Whenever stuff starts to break down, you just have to go, you just have to play. Therese asked him a couple of questions there, like trying to find something to critique. Saying, you know, did you have any coaching points afterwards for him? Or, you know, was it flipping perfect? And he said, yeah, our coaching points were don't get too big of a head and don't fumble the ball, which you didn't do, but just like we were a little bit worried about because you carry it like a hoagie sometimes. They were looking for things to critique, looking for excuses to let Nagy say, well, yeah, but he also, his footwork was, or his throw was off, or his this, that, nothing. There was nothing there. That is super rare. If you listen to Andy Reid and this whole coaching staff, you ask about the rookies. Every time they give you a little bit of good and a little bit of bad, they say, this is the good thing he did, this is what he needs to work on. The reporters that were trying to give the Chiefs have too many difficult to pronounce coordinator names, and some, I'm pretty confident in them all now, but sometimes I'm going to just stumble right over it. Everyone should be named Sutton. We should have defensive Sutton and offensive Sutton and special team Sutton. The way that he was talking about Mahomes there was just nothing but positives. And the Chiefs are not an organization where they will just say, oh, everything is great, here's what we're happy about. No, they're willing to sort of keep their rookies in their lane. So I thought that was very interesting from offensive Sutton. Also, Brad Childress is like not actually a co-offensive coordinator now. So in case you were wondering, yes, Matt Nagy is the offensive coordinator now, even though it's obviously kind of Andy Reid's offense, but. I found that something that I could be very optimistic about. The other thing that, other bit of audio from yesterday came from Tyreek Hill that I thought was interesting, and it's made a little bit of news recently. We're probably going to have to hit that next segment. Let's go to the phones really quick here, though. 913-3810-810 is the phone number. If you call in now, we'll get to the top of the next hour. But let's go ahead and start right now with JT. JT, what's up?
Hey, guys. I just overheard that piece on the Nagy discussing Mahomes. And mm-hmm. The thing that caught my ear right away was when he said that, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said you either have it or you don't have it.
Yes, yes.
To me, that is the most telling piece whole discussion,
yes.
Because what he's really saying is this guy has it,
yes,
and he's kind of saying our other guy doesn't.
JT, I completely agree with you. That's whenever the DNA thing and the instinct thing. Yeah, no, you found another way of another point that he. Because really, I think he said something along those lines three or four times in that 2 minute segment.
Probably so. He stood out to me. But yeah, you're probably right, because he was really – he wasn't slobbering over him completely, but he was basically saying, we've got a guy that can do it.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. So, hey, this is really awesome, and you guys are really breaking down a lot of football today. I'm enjoying it. I listened to yesterday, and I think you guys should call the show on Saturdays now only sports. Okay? Because there was no titular discussion of, you know, crazy things occurring in the news or anything pop culture-wise.
Yeah.
It was very much focused on sports, and it was pretty enjoyable, but it was not what we've grown used to. So
sure.
I thought I'd throw that out there.
Well, JT, I appreciate it as always, and I also appreciate the subtle nudges to less sportsy things here and there. Because like I completely forgot to write down Steve Bannon's name on my rundown list for today. And that's amazing. Like we have like 45 seconds left in this hour, so we'll just do it now. The new White House press secretary said that Steve Bannon is trying to bleep his own bleep. I can't quote the White House on this show anymore. It's too profane. We're living in such a fun world. Thank you, JT, for that reminder of something that, oh my goodness, I can't believe I almost would have gone 2 hours of talking about today. Oh, it's so very interesting. And also, there's a very exciting thing that I can't talk about yet that I'm also looking forward to. Whenever we come back, we're going to do some more sports, I suppose. More drooling over Pat Mahomes. Don't bleep your own bleep.
Yeah, we're skipping church, too. This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. My name is Joshua Briscoe. There's a lot going on right now. Very quick Royals note. I said earlier in the show that I think today's game is actually important. I think they need to get a winning series against a winning team. Ned Yost disagrees. Mike Moustakas is not starting today. So bleep me, right? Also, Nate Buchady is going to hopefully be sending us some sound from training camp. If we get some of that hot off the press, we'll get some of that on the show today. We also might get some Nate Buchady on the show today, but we're not sure because we're only here for another hour. And there's a lot to get to. A few things coming down the line, though, from training camp. Also, Justin Houston is participating now in 11-on-11s. It apparently looks fine. Which is good. We probably will not hear from Nate Buchady today, but we may get some sound. We'll see. Tyler Bray stepped in at quarterback and threw a long ball to Tyreek Hill. Marcus Peters was there with him step for step, apparently, and Peters had the ball in his hand, but Tyreek Hill knocked it away. A couple of notes there. One, Tyler Bray underthrowing people is inexcusable, and Tyreek Hill is constantly more physical than people give him credit for. In fact, actually, Charlie, let's get that Tyreek Hill sound that we have up. Let's start with that, because this is Tyreek Hill from yesterday talking about if he's going to be returning kickoffs and everything this season, if he'll miss it, if he wants it in big games, how he'll be used. And this is a justified question and a good response from Hill, but I cannot stop this feeling that we are just talking about Tyreek Hill in the wrong way.
Oh, nah, man. Coach Tobe and Coach Reed, they obviously know what they're doing with that. We got DeAnthony. We got DeMarcus. We got guys like that who can come in and give the same type of explosive play that I can. So, I mean, ain't nothing going to change. It's all going to be the same. But will I miss it? Yes. You know what I'm saying? Because it's another chance for me to score. So, yeah.
If the game's on the line, do you want that play call, though? As a kick returner?
Oh, yeah, obviously, man. Yeah. Big time play. So, yeah, I want the pressure, and I want to go out there and make the play.
That's how the Eagles used DeSean Jackson for a long time. Odell Beckham returns punts in big moments still. I think he had a handful of punt returns last year for the Giants. So that's what the response should be. But here's the thing. The thing with Tyreek Hill that I just keep going back to, I was furious 2 weeks ago with Herm Edwards talking about Tyreek Hill not being a red zone threat, and also just him being like a limited receiver all around. We're just talking about him wrong, man. He's the same size as DeSean Jackson, but faster and a little bit thicker. I think they're both 5'10", according to whatever it was that I was using to find their. I wasn't measuring them. I didn't have a tape measure, and DeSean Jackson and Tyreek Hill standing back to back or anything, lest you think I was.
He actually did, and it was really funny
yeah.
to see.
They were both in the studio. I didn't talk to either of them on air. They were both in here 2 weeks ago in the studio, just putting back-to-back, same exact height. But Tyreek Hill's a little bit stronger, And he's a little bit faster. At this point in his career, I'm sure he's a step faster than DeSean Jackson. We're not dealing with... Oh, here's the reason I thought about this yesterday was because Brad Porter was talking about him with... maybe with Nick Jacobs or maybe it was with Derek. I don't remember. But he was saying how, you know, Tyreek Hill's got a little bit of Devin Hester in him. Don't waste that Devin Hester. And I just think we're talking about Tyreek Hill wrong. I think we should be saying, there's DeSean Jackson in him. Don't waste him on kickoff returns. Charlie, find out for me, please, how many career receiving touchdowns Devin Hester had. I've got a number in my, or Dante Hall or whatever. Because the number is going to be shockingly low for a guy where all of us know both of those names. We all know Dante Hall. We all know Devin Hester as these unbelievably electric return men who never really made it as wide receivers. Charlie says 16 career return touchdowns only, right?
Oh, I thought you said receiving touchdowns.
No.
Oh, yeah.
The return number is lower. Okay.
Yeah.
So Devin Hester got run as a receiver because they wanted to make him a bigger part of the game. I think that's also telling. Whenever Dante Hall or Devin Hester become these electric guys returning punts and kickoffs, you want to get them involved in the offense also because you want that playmaking ability in the facet of the game that is made for scoring. Tyreek Hill is explosive. He's a great field position weapon. He's a good scoring weapon in the return game occasionally. But whenever it comes to actually scoring points, that's what the offense is there for. DeAnthony Thomas can be a good field position piece. He can even run a couple back. What did you find out about Devin Hester's career return touchdowns?
14.
14 career return touchdowns over a decade in the NFL, something like that. I mean, getting two return touchdowns a year would be historic. On the right days in the offense, Tyreek Hill could be scoring two touchdowns a game on offense.
Why does that number seem low?
Because you remember them. Because return touchdowns are exciting, and you see them at halftime on Sunday Night Football and at halftime on Monday Night Football and all week long on ESPN. Because a 98-yard return, a 98-yard touchdown from a kickoff return is huge. And also, Devin Hester was a star because of that. They're hugely eventful plays, and they switch the momentum of the game, and they're valuable, but that's not the most efficient time to use your best players, obviously. Whenever guys get to be a real part of the offense, Jamaal Charles stops returning kickoffs because then he becomes your workhorse running back. That happened. I think we've got to stop talking about Tyreek Hill as Devin Hester. Start talking about Tyreek Hill as DeSean Jackson. That's my take. Spicy. Also happening in that wide receiver room, in case you missed it, the Chiefs cut Jeremy Maclin a little while ago. Breaking news to a few of you, I'm sure. So the Chiefs have an unbelievably young wide receiver room. And a pretty shallow wide receiver room. Sometimes being super young is a compliment. Not really in this case when you're trying to be a contender this year. And I think it's going to get younger. I think by the time that the regular season gets around here, there's a very good chance the Chiefs will have spent this offseason cutting their two most veteran wide receivers. I mentioned earlier on that I wrote a little piece of an article for Arrowhead Addict. You can find that on my Twitter account, at JB Briscoe. Boom, drink. Or you go over to Arrowhead Addict and find that also. A story about who I think is a likely surprise cut from training camp. Now, in the comments of this, apparently some people would not find this to be a surprise. I think these people who are not realizing exactly how long this guy stuck around and the fact that he is the most veteran receiver in that room, the oldest receiver in that room. I think he's the same number, has the same number of years as Chris Conley. But I think Albert Wilson could very well not make this team for a bunch of different reasons. First of all, again, he's 25 and is the oldest current wide receiver on this team, which paired with the release of Jeremy Maclin would be surprising. But I think even with a super weak depth chart at wide receiver, the Chiefs might end up doing this move, and they probably should. Albert Wilson had less than 300 receiving yards last year, which actually surprised me. That seemed even lower than I thought it was. And he didn't come into games and then inspire defenses to quiver in fear. In case you missed, you think, in case you were afraid of missing that, that never happened. His biggest play was that fake punt. D'Anthony Thomas can run that. And I think you could reasonably say that Albert Wilson is the ninth best pass-catching threat on this team right now. Hill, Conley, Robinson, Chesson, Thomas, Kelsey, Gavin Escobar, Demetrius Harris. You can start to piece them together. And the Chiefs are going to be carrying at least three running backs and likely a fullback into 2017. This roster is going to be pretty full up of talent players, of weapons. Even if you are bullish on Albert Wilson, you've got at least four running backs, three tight ends, and two or three wide receivers making the team before him at minimum. Then that the quagmire of Wilson and Robinson and Chesson and D'Anthony Thomas, that's where you have to start trying to find those tiebreakers and who makes a team and who doesn't. You would probably consider Albert Wilson to be a sort of special teams ace because that punt return touchdown, just sort of the way that he's been a part of this team. But last year, Albert Wilson had four special teams tackles. He received one kickoff, no punts. DeMarcus Robinson also had four tackles. D'Anthony Thomas had three, and he was the kickoff return man. D'Anthony Thomas returned more kickoffs last year than anybody else. I have the reason to think that that's going to change unless one of those running backs ends up taking that spot. Now you can add the guy that I presume to be the third running back on this roster, Charcandrick West, add him to that special teams unit, and there is plenty of athleticism there on special teams. And then the final piece of what I think you have to unpack as a surprise cut prediction is, does this move make practical sense? According to Over the Cap, the Chiefs could release Albert Wilson and save $1.8 million against the cap and have absolutely no dead cap money from that transaction. That's the nail in the coffin, right? You can pay Albert Wilson $1.8 million to receive 300 yards, although he is now partially replacing Jeremy Maclin, I suppose. Or you could pay him nothing and just move on. That's it for me, though. The cap number, no dead cap money. The Chiefs should, and I think very likely may, just keep forsaking their most veteran wide receivers. That's sort of the surprise cut that I have hitched my wagon to. I also think Tyler Bray is a real option. He's in a similar boat where it's like $1.3 million to pay him, no money to let him go. Joel Stave. I want to call him Stave, but yesterday Brad Porter called him Joel Stave, the current fourth quarterback. And I don't know if that was a joke or if it's his actual name. I've never heard anyone else say his name out loud. I've just seen it in print a lot. He can hold the clipboard for like $500,000, I think. I think that's the rookie minimum, something like that. So unless Andy Reid is truly afraid of playing Patrick Mahomes this season, you are not going to need Tyler Bray to hold a $1.3 million clipboard. Unless you think he's the backup starting next year. But I've been waiting for Tyler Bray to back up somebody for like 3 years now, and just never happening. I'm starting to think that the Tyler Bray experiment has reached its unfortunate conclusion, but he's made some good money doing it. So, you know, I'm not weeping for him. I just think that's about it for Tyler Bray. 913-3810-810. Here's the phone number. The bit of news from last week was a trade the Chiefs made. And I mean, it's, you know, news in quotation marks, but it was newsworthy, and a lot of people had questions about it. The Chiefs traded Pro Bowl special teamer and inside linebacker DJ Alexander to the Seattle Seahawks for linebacker Kevin Pierre-Louis. And it created, like I said, some questions, some sort of yammering But I think it all is logical enough if you take the time to sort of unpack it piece by piece. Yeah, they lose a guy who made the Pro Bowl based on his special teams acumen. But also, I think that Nick Jacobs pointed this out yesterday, the Chiefs took advantage of him being in the Pro Bowl because in the Pro Bowl he was playing in a 4-3 defense where he had a chance at inside linebacker to roam around a little bit, which makes him a more natural fit with the Seahawks. And the Chiefs will make, inevitably, more guys look great on special teams. If special teams Sutton, if Dave Tobe didn't say, if he would have said, hey, no, can't have it, he cannot go, then I don't think he would have gone. I think Brett Veach and Bob Sutton and Andy Reid and Dave Tobe probably on the same page here. Bringing in Kevin Pierre-Lewis into the equation. That brings the next question, though, is what's he good for? Seahawks were willing to move on from him pretty quickly. And for a guy that is ostensibly a special teamer. Here's what we know about Kevin Pierre-Lewis. He's got some incredible speed and quickness for an inside linebacker. And it seems like his biggest strength at this point is probably going to be in third down scenarios whenever he has to cover the middle of the field, which makes sense for the Chiefs. It's a move that makes sense because Derek Johnson, as he ages and comes back from his injury last year, you expect him to continue just sort of slowing down with time. And if you can get him a few less snaps, maybe he's not on the field on third downs, that's fine by me. He's there to quarterback the defense and to contain the run game more than anything else. That's his job. Making him cover a running back out of the backfield on third down is something that he did very well as a younger guy. I just don't think I would have him doing now in 2017. So Kevin Pierre-Lewis, I think, has a clear shot to make this team by doing that. Because for the things that Ramique Wilson does well, that's not one of them. For the things that Justin Marshall-Lillard does well, I feel like there's constantly a gap in the middle of the field in third down scenarios where teams are able to sort of just pick apart the defense across the middle a little bit. Hopefully, KPL, if I may, will be the guy that helps sort of patch that up a little bit for the Chiefs. We're going to take a break here, and whenever we come back, a really kind of bizarre thing happened on Twitter the last couple of days. People are talking about booing Jamaal Charles, and I'm not going to rage against the machine here, but I'm just sort of confused by this conversation. And so here's a tease. No, don't do that.
This is Sports Sunday.
When I talked about the Chiefs and Colin Kaepernick, you guys loved it.
With Joshua Briscoe.
A few selections from the Facebook comment thread of the podcast includes, I heard this live and I thought his argument supporting the idea was inarticulate. He just wants attention because no one knows who he is. More on that later. Joshua Briscoe's an idiot. We don't want nor need an un-American moron as our quarterback.
On Sports Radio 810.
He is a disgrace to the human race.
WHB.
So good. God. That was a rough day for me. I got told to stick my head in an oven. By the way, I need to correct something. I misspoke earlier. Anthony Scaramucci is the White House Communications Director. The press secretary is Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Yeah. Also, if you... Charlie did not know the Anthony Scaramucci quote. Google. Just Google. Scaramucci, Steve Bannon, New Yorker, I think it was. The article was in.
Can you spell Scaramucci for me, please?
Sure. That's like Scar, S-C-A-R, then A, then Mucci, M-U-C-C-I. You got to do the little hand thing, which might be a cultural appropriation. I don't know. But that story has some of the most amazing quotes I've literally ever seen in the history of reporting. Like that, that is not hyperbolic. There's some unbelievable things in there, and I cannot say them on radio. That's how good they are.
Like you said, what a time to be alive.
What a time to be alive. It's The Scaramucci thing is actually, we're going to do this for just a second. The Scaramucci thing is something that I genuinely hope that everyone is having fun with, because every time, like, if you say anything political, if you say White House, like, somebody turns off the radio, somebody drives a car off a bridge, four people start, like, fist pumping in general directions, either out of joy or anger.
I just got three calls just now.
Right,
people
exactly.
Yelling at you.
Yeah. Exactly, yes. You will inspire rage if you go, did you see what the president tweeted? Just everything around you starts caving in. But I hope everyone is having fun with the Scaramucci thing, because he's just a guy serving as the White House communications director who's just like mother effing people, like just dropping bombs on people in the White House and outside of it. Like, he is a bipartisan bleep talker. And I respect that so much. That's what I want to be when I grow up. I want to be known as a bipartisan bleep talker. I think I love him. It's a great story. And if you don't enjoy politics, fine, I get it. It's super contentious right now. So if you're not a confrontational person, then, like, I understand why you wouldn't. And if you're very Trumpy, or if you're very anti-Trumpy, it doesn't matter. You have to be able to appreciate this guy, I think. He just absolutely freewheeling it right now. I love
it. Back to sport!
Thank you, every caller. Thank you, every caller ever. All right, fine. Sports, man. We only have like 30 minutes left in this show, and there are like five topics I want to get to, but I do want to talk about Jamaal Charles, because I was tweeted this morning, a poll went out yesterday, and I don't know how big of a conversation this was, but it hit my radar, so I want to talk about it. Is it okay to boo Jamaal Charles whenever the Broncos come to Arrowhead? And so, like, here's, like, there are a bunch of things. But first of all, my first response was, like, wait, why? What? Is this? Why? Why would you? The Chiefs fired him. He was laid off. Why would you boo that guy? He was here for years, and his body was broken 15 different ways, playing for the team that your city holds so dear. Then he got fired by that team. Then he signed with another team that wanted him. How dare he? And I asked why. I said, why would you boo him? And somebody tweeted me and said, because he went to the Broncos by choice and threw shade at the Chiefs on the way out. And I have a problem with both of those things. First of all, I don't know if anyone else was really interested in Jamaal Charles, but the Broncos are a good fit. It's a pretty good team. Need a quarterback real bad, but they've got really good offensive weapons. He should go there. He's with the Broncos by choice because the Chiefs fired him by choice. He didn't demand a trade or something. And he didn't really throw shade at the Chiefs. He went to the Broncos because it was a good fit and a good option. And then when he went to Denver, he said good things about his new employer. If you got fired by one company and then you got picked up by the crosstown rival, you would not go tweet about how your heart will always be with the company that fired you. I just don't understand that. You wouldn't expect that in any other line of work. I'm going to make every office job Dunder Mifflin because it's just the easiest comparison that won't offend anybody, I don't think. If you work for paper company A and they fire you, and paper company B gives you a job, then you would suddenly remember, oh, you know what? I've always wanted to work for paper company B. I used to use their paper all the time as a kid. They made the best paper airplanes growing up. You say that because the team you're with, and they're the competitor with the team that fired you? Fine. Charles said that he was, like, looking forward to playing the Chiefs or whatever. Yeah, man, he's a competitor. He got destroyed for the Chiefs, and I know for himself because he got paid and everything. But as a member of the Chiefs, for this team, He just destroyed himself for years. Now he wants to prove to them that the Chiefs made a mistake. He wants the Chiefs to believe that they made a mistake by releasing him and giving him the freely earned opportunity to go play for Denver. What about that transaction? Like, listen, you can, I guess you as a paying fan can boo whoever you want. I'm not particularly interested in telling you you're not allowed to boo. But in this case, I would love to know, why do you want to? What makes you filled with such rage that you must boo a man who you've been cheering for close to a decade? Something like 6-7 years? I just don't understand. I don't understand the motivation of that. 913-3810-810 is the phone number if you have a thought about it. Let's go to the phones now. We're going to go to Steve. Steve, you're on Sports Sunday. What's on your mind?
Yeah, no, I totally think it may be a millennial thing.
Okay.
I mean, I just interviewed a guy last week, and his entire resume was built around not wanting to get the job that he was applying for and not wanting to work for the company that he was trying to get a job from. It was like, you know, I can't believe you have to explain to people that, you know, you apply for the job that you want to get, and, you know, on your resume, it's, you know, every job you apply for is the job you're looking for, and that's what Jamal Charles did.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he's doing now. He did what you're supposed to do, but I think the people who don't get that are the same people who don't understand how to apply for a job.
So you say it's a millennial thing, and what do you mean by that? Like, I don't know what you mean by that.
I mean, I think, and with the younger set of kids that are out there, they don't understand. You know, they still are buying into this dream of, oh, no, it's, you know, Jamal Charles should always want to be a Chief. He should never want another job. He should follow his dream, and we should be the only team he'll ever play for. It's like, you know, it's a job.
Steve, that's really interesting because I'm kind of experiencing that differently, where largely I think it tends to be an older generation that's more attached to sort of like the team loyalty thing. Because like, I'm 22 and I don't understand why you would be booing a guy for taking a job. But maybe it's not a generational thing. I don't know.
It may not be. It may be that that's just what I'm seeing, and you're seeing something different.
Well, no, I'm usually really interested in finding where there are like generational gaps and everything. But I'm just sort of seeing because like Charlie and I, our combined age, like can barely get a rental car legally. And the two of us are kind of on that page of, maybe it's just a logic thing. I don't know. And there are a lot of people in our generation that are still working on the whole logic thing. Maybe, I don't know, but.
Well, and it may be that, you know, I mean, it's a mindset and how you're brought up and what
maybe
you're taught.
So.
But, you know, we were brought up that, you know, you find something you're willing to do for what somebody's willing to pay you for.
Mm-hmm.
And you take that thing. And that's basically what Jamal Charles did. It wasn't like there were 20 teams out there offering him jobs.
Right.
And
right.
When you get the job, you do whatever you got to do to keep it. And if that means, you know, you tell them how awesome they are, you know, tell them how awesome they are.
Of course. Yeah, I think it's really basic, like, self-preservation. Like, what Jamal Charles wanted, he obviously played college at Texas. What Jamal Charles wanted was not to grow up to achieve his dream of playing for the Chiefs. It was to play in the NFL. That's the dream he's working for. Expand that by you go and you play a few years for the Broncos. If he gets a couple of years there, Godspeed.
You know, and he's looking at a career field that, you know, he's going to be washed up and done by the time he's 40.
Oh, yeah.
So
he's
got to, like, milk every single year he can, especially in the NFL where your pension is based on your years of service.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's a year sitting on the bench, that's a ton more money for him.
Yes. Steve, I'm right there with you. I think you and I have bridged a generational divide, and I think that you and I should run for president.
Well, I feel better as a person.
Me too. Steve, thank you for the call.
Thanks.
I think we're solving big issues here. I will never be told this show isn't serious enough. We are solving problems. All right, let's go to Jim. Jim, we can either talk about Jamal Charles or solving world hunger. We'll do either one in your order.
Let's start off with Charles first. That one's
okay.
A little easier.
Okay, cool. If you insist.
Look, I think it's about extremes. There's some people who don't like what happened, so they say boo him. And, you know, just like politics, everything has to go to the extreme.
Right.
The problem here is that the guy was a great chief, and he may be one of the best running backs ever. And if he were smart, he would have stayed in good graces with the Chiefs fans, because he could be drawing money, doing advertisements, stuff with the Chiefs and everything else for the rest of his life. Instead, he knew what happens when you go from the Chiefs to the Broncos. Mm-hmm. And to make it even worse, he opened his mouth and made stupid comments. So I say when he comes here, you don't boo the guy because he had a great legacy. Just ignore him because now he's irrelevant and he's made it clear that he doesn't care that much about the Chiefs. So forget it.
Well, Jim, the one thing that I would say to that is I think his career in Denver is going to be largely as sort of if not a third down back, as a part time back. I think his legacy, I don't think it'll be like Peyton Manning, where you kind of have half of a Colts memory and half of a Broncos memory. I think Jamaal Charles in Denver will be pretty much, will be even less than Tony Gonzalez in Atlanta.
I totally agree. And if he wouldn't have made the comments and stuff that he made. And some of it's going to be with how his behavior is when he plays the Chiefs and when he comes here.
Yeah, I think that 5 years from now, if whatever Price Chopper wants Jamaal Charles to endorse something, I think he would be perfectly well received in Kansas City. In fact,
I think it's just like Neil Smith.
To bring up Neil Smith.
He can advertise anything he wants. I'd go the other way and I wouldn't buy it because he left and went to the Broncos.
Jim, I just pulled up Neil Smith's Pro Football Reference page to get the years and everything, because he ended up spending some time with the Chargers in 2000.
But he had good years with the Broncos.
Oh, sure, yes.
Good years with the Chargers.
But I remember it was the 2013. No, it wouldn't have been 2013. I went to some Chiefs draft party. It was the year they took Tyson Jackson, because they had the third overall pick, and it was very exciting, and they took Tyson Jackson, and everyone was very sad. But Neil Smith was there signing autographs and everything. I don't have any, and maybe this is also me not really paying attention to, I mean, barely being alive when Neil Smith was playing. Maybe it'll be a younger generation that sort of forgives Jamaal Charles, but I don't feel myself at least holding a grudge. I think that eventually the idea that Charles sort of snubbed the Chiefs on the way out is going to dissolve. He didn't say anything poisonous. He just said that he always wanted to play for the Broncos, which is what you say whenever you're getting a new gig.
Not if you're a Chiefs fan.
Well, no, he's not a Chiefs fan, though. He's a Chiefs employee.
I know, but we are, so we don't have to say it's okay. And it's not okay.
Well, and yeah, you don't have to. You're right. And, Jim, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Yep.
You don't have to, but I'm going to, because I don't have any problem looking at Charles as a guy who was trying to stay in the NFL and was cashing a paycheck. And, you know, you work for your team. And Jamaal Charles never did a single thing in Kansas City that you would ever question. Was he really a Chief during his time here? And he's not anymore. So whenever he went to the Broncos, he became a Bronco and he talked like a Bronco. I just think that's sort of part of this whole interaction. But I also am really glad to get other people's thoughts on it. I also kind of just don't really understand booing in general. That kind of misses me. I don't know why. I don't really get great joy out of like heckling someone else at their job, and I'm not being like snobby about it. I'm too intellectual to insult other people while they're doing their job. I'm not going to boo them from the stands. No, I just don't really like. I don't have a urge to like boo other people. I don't think. Is that weird? That might be weird. I don't know. Maybe we're just in different places on that. But I do think it's interesting. And I'm glad we got to talk about it. Real quick, and then we'll take a break and come back for our last segment. This two-hour show is just a little quick sugar. It's flying right by. ESPN ranked NFL teams' offensive weapons. More accurately, Bill Barnwell ranked NFL teams' offensive weapons. And it just ranks running backs, receivers, and tight ends as a lump sum. And it does not consider quarterbacks or offensive lines. It's just offensive talent at the running back, receiver, and tight end positions. Where do you think the Chiefs came in on that list? Do some math real quick. and go not dealing with quarterbacks. You would think that Alex Smith probably would pull that down a little bit because he's a below average, or he is the definition of an average quarterback. Maybe that drag, not a part of it. Just pure offensive talent at running back, wide receiver, and tight end. Charlie, do you have a number in your head? Where do you think the Chiefs ranked in the NFL? By talent of just those three positions.
Those three?
Yeah.
I'm going to say right in the middle.
That's what I would have said.
Yeah.
I would have probably said 15 to 20. Bill Barnwell had him come in at 27, which is very low. That's bottom five. Remember whenever Evan Silva said they had a bottom five offensive talent? Apparently that's a shared experience across the league. And I've been very critical of the Chiefs' management of their offensive talent, and their depth is virtually non-existent. But even I, the eternally cynical, I can't figure out how a team with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce is bottom five in offensive talent. But in fairness, for comparison's sake here, I said 15 to 20. I think 20 is the lowest that I would have put them on sort of knee-jerk reaction. This list at number 20 has the New York Giants, who have Odell Beckham Jr., who I would trade literally any player on the Chiefs roster for, maybe not named Pat Mahomes. But there's, do you know who their second option is offensively? Sterling Shepard. I think going into his second year.
Got Brandon Marshall now, though, too.
Oh, you're right.
The Giants, yeah.
I wonder if that was in the article.
I don't know if they included that. That's why I was. That's what kind of gave you that look.
You're
when
right.
They said Giants.
No, you're
20.
Right.
I'm like,
you're
oh my
right.
Gosh.
They also did just sign Brandon Marshall. So I think. Oh God, my microphone just fell over. If it sounded like I was just running away from the microphone, that's why. So yeah, it's Odell Beckham and then Sterling Shepard's second season. Brandon Marshall just got added. That's number 20. And I was going through sort of the rest of these teams and thinking, well, yeah, like Washington has some talent again. Then they lost Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson, but they brought in Terrell Pryor. I think you could claw the Chiefs up that list a little bit to that 15 to 20 list. But there are a lot of teams with better talent, especially if you go through the depth. There are a lot of teams whose third weapon is better than Chris Conley. The other place where I really think this misses, where I really think the national view is off of the Chiefs' offense, and this is optimistic of me, but I think the running game is being underrated now. Spencer Ware had flashes of looking like an actual number one running back, like a top 10 running back before his injury. He sort of wore down throughout the season, as running backs tend to do. If he rebounds, Kareem Hunt is a guy that I believe in already. Charcandrick West as your third guy. That rotation is really strong and very versatile. So I think that whole position group is being overly discounted. But I am more optimistic and more generous in the ranking of the whole group as a whole, whatever you consider the talent at the running back spot. But I thought that was interesting. For the second time this offseason, a national NFL media member is contended that the Chiefs have bottom five offensive talent. And I'm not going to fight that tooth and nail. Where would they be if they also had Jeremy Maclin? Higher up. About 10 spots higher up, probably. In fact, I wonder where he put the Ravens. Then we'll move on from this, I promise. I thought this was... Well, actually. Oh, my. The Ravens are at 28. Which makes sense, because they needed Jeremy Maclin because they're in rough shape. But as critical as I've been of how the Chiefs have managed their offensive talent, even that feels like a really mean ranking. It feels like there's an axe to grind with how poorly the Chiefs have managed their offense this year, this offseason. And also, you know, maybe it'll get better whenever they cut Albert Wilson. God. But I think bottom five is a little bit harsh. Whenever we come back, Clark Hunt said something about Colin Kaepernick, and it's really not that big of a deal. Please don't yell at me. It'll just be a couple of minutes. It's a really quick conversation, and I promise it makes sense. Just hold on. Just come back, please.
This is Sports Sunday.
Then I realized that NFL Network right now is doing a top 10 list of top 10 Peyton Manning games. God, that man has caused me more pain than my parents' divorce.
With Joshua Briscoe.
My parents aren't divorced, but...
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Yeah. I pull up in Lexus like it's 07. I just hit a lick. I got it. It doesn't matter if I ever make anybody else laugh, because I make myself laugh. Hearing these liners back is so good. I was just texting my dad during the break, because he was saying that he thinks the caller about the millennial attitude towards jobs and everything, it was actually the way that I was contending it was, that most of the millennials, I think, are like, yeah, I mean, he's on a new team. Now that makes sense, because we don't really experience sports in a way where teams are completely loyal, or players or teams are loyal to each other. There are going to be kids who have grown up with the biggest star in their entire lifetime being LeBron James, a guy who has gone from Cleveland to Miami to Cleveland to, like, L.A. or something. And then, who knows, maybe back to Cleveland for the last, like, year of his career. Like, and that's not a one-way street. That's not LeBron's fault. Teams and players aren't loyal to each other if they don't have to be. Baseball contracts are the baseball is the most loyal sport simply because you're forced into loyalty so often. But even then, like, the Yankees eventually made Alex Rodriguez just quit. And guys like, I mean, like, Ichiro was in Miami. Stuff happens. So I think that if I had to go back in that, digging through that pile for answers, I would stay in that, with that belief of a younger generation of sports fans doesn't expect loyalty, especially not whenever the team doesn't show it and the player just goes elsewhere. And I think if you do expect that, you're sort of lagging behind on what sports really are right now. And for me, I think it was probably Tony Gonzalez ending up in Atlanta. That was sort of like that was a turning point for me. Like, oh yeah, he wanted to go actually win. He wasn't going to win here, and he finished his career playing for the Falcons. Like, ugh, gross. If he would have gone to Denver, maybe it would have been different for me. I don't know. But I think even then, especially in a case where Jamal Charles got fired, got released, Chiefs didn't want to pay him anymore, not going to hold a grudge for a guy going to a team that is willing to pay him to do the thing that he wants to do. I went back to that because of the fact that in the rejoin, I accused my parents of severely harming me as a person throughout their divorce proceedings, even though they're not divorced. I don't know why that amuses me so much, but it really does. It's good that I amuse myself because I haven't seen Charlie smile for 2 years. Worked here for 2 years, never seen Charlie smile once. Stone face. The training camp updates keep coming, and also we're doing this show until 11:30. We received some bad information. I mean, the schedule was wrong. So we're here for an extra 30 minutes, which is very exciting. Got about 40 minutes of show time left. Also, let's keep producing the show live as we're finding out there's more show to have. Charlie, tell Nate that we have until 11:30 now. If he is sending in any sound from training camp, or if he wants to hop on at some point, well, that we'll be here till 11:30. So maybe we'll have some fresh sound for you from training camp. But the tweets have been interesting, things you may be missing. Therese Paylor tweeted that Tyreek Hill has been bossing up today. He's caught multiple passes from Smith, both short and deep, and he looked as electric as ever. Alex Smith also has apparently looked very good. He continues to be extremely accurate and also taking a few shots down the field, which, again, you know, I want to see that in an actual game. That'd be awesome. But what are you going to complain about now? Just look good while you can, at the very least, please. Therese also tweeted that he had Mahomes going 7 for 9 in his first team session in pads as a Chief. A couple errant throws out of bounds, but was generally on point. Again, just I'll retweet that with syringe emojis because that's where I am now. Also, Smith went to Tyreek Hill, who beat Peters 40 yards downfield. That matchup is just there might not be a more interesting matchup in football right now in any training camp than Tyreek Hill versus Marcus Peters. I promised I was going to mention this, so I want to talk about it briefly here. Clark Hunt mentioned Colin Kaepernick's name, so it became a story. Clark Hunt said that he'd have no hesitation in signing Colin Kaepernick, and he wasn't avoiding the actual reason that Kaepernick isn't employed. His quote was, "There are certain circumstances where guys get in trouble off the field, and that's something that we as an organization and as a family we care about. We're not going to bring those types of players in. In terms of a player like Colin, I would have no hesitation bringing him into the organization." A few things here. One, Tyreek Hill had some off-the-field trouble, and he's still here, but that's not the point of this, so I'm going to breathe and move on. Two, the Chiefs are not a reasonable landing spot for Colin Kaepernick, so it's easier for Clark Hunt to say that, because no one actually expects them to follow through on this unless Alex Smith or Patrick Mahomes were to become severely injured. So there's not a ton weighing on what Clark said compared to what it would be like if a quarterback needy team said that. But third, still, good on Clark Hunt for saying that. He could have kicked around the topic of, you know, well, we don't need a quarterback right now, so we're not even worrying about what Colin Kaepernick's employment status is. He didn't do that. He made a clear definition of saying some guys cause problems and have had off-the-field problems. Colin Kaepernick is not that guy. And I respect Clark Hunt for saying that. The other thing, though, is Arrowhead Pride put out a poll. It ended up with over 2,000 votes. And 62% of the voters on that poll said they would not be okay with the Chiefs signing Colin Kaepernick. And first, I want to give voters every benefit of the doubt that I can possibly give. I wouldn't want the Chiefs to sign Colin Kaepernick now anyway. I want my third-string quarterback, as I said earlier, to be making the rookie or veteran minimum. I don't want Colin Kaepernick on the Chiefs at this moment. But that is obviously not the spirit of the question. The Chiefs are a team with Tyreek Hill as their best pass catcher, and Michael Vick, convicted felon, is a coaching intern right now. And I'm not raging against either of those things. We're just letting those happen. We're just letting that happen. That's just part of the Chiefs organization right now. I just can't believe that we keep coming back to this point where for a large number of people, the inexcusable thing there is Colin Kaepernick's protest, I guess. And it's not about his talent, because he's one of the 30 most talented quarterbacks in the NFL, and Ryan Fitzpatrick has a job, and Geno Smith has a job, and Dan Orlovsky has a job, and Cardale Jones just got traded for a draft pick. Don't tell me Colin Kaepernick can't play quarterback better than any of those guys. He's not demanding a starting job. He's not demanding a certain salary. He's never said any of those things. If he was, why would he bother trying out for a team like Seattle? Even why would he even consider Seattle? Because he's obviously not going there to be the starter. I find it so thoroughly reprehensible that that's where the line gets drawn. And again, benefit of the doubt, the spirit of the question is I think, would you be comfortable with Colin Kaepernick being on your team? Not would you want Colin Kaepernick as your quarterback on the Chiefs right now? Because again, the Chiefs quarterback situation is figured out. But I was talking about this. Remember that liner from a little while ago? I got told to stick my head in the oven. Colin Kaepernick is human garbage or whatever. I was talking about that before the draft. And the response was beyond 62% at the time. I cannot rationalize those things. I can't see you making excuses for Tyreek Hill or talking about Michael Vick's second chance while dismissing Clark Hunt, while disagreeing with Clark Hunt that Colin Kaepernick could fit into this organization. And it's almost a disservice to even have him in the same conversation as Tyreek Hill and Michael Vick, because Colin Kaepernick didn't do anything wrong. Disrespectful? Sure. Fine. You can have that. Felonious? Not so much. Not at all. Literally not at all. I'm glad that Clark Hunt talked about it. I'm glad that he owned up to it and said, yeah, we would accept him here. That makes me feel better about this organization as a whole.
This is Sports Sunday.